Welcome to the Capital Connection, a weekly program questioning New York State leaders on a variety of issues. Your host is Dr. Alan Chartok, political scientist and professor emeritus at the University at Albany. Distribution for the Capital Connection is made possible with the help of New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.
It's the Capital Connection. Hi, I'm Alan Chartok. This week, it's columnist and Albany bureau chief of the New York Daily News, probably the smartest guy about politics in Albany, Ken Lovett. Welcome back, Ken.
Good to be back.
So there's so much to talk about. But as we speak, the next day will be the New York State primary. So we really can't talk about that. But we can ask you this. This has been a remarkable campaign. I think one of the more interesting things, without saying who won, because we can't, is that Tish James, who is the governor's anointed attorney general pick, really has had a very rough road here, hasn't she?
She's had a very bad campaign, according to a lot of people, including supporters. And the funny thing is, Tish James was considered a major progressive figure in New York. I believe she was the first elected official to actually win a race on just the Working Families Party line. So she had the progressive cred that you would think going into a race would help in a Democratic primary.
And they gave her her chance. Let's all remember that the Working Families Party gave her her launch.
Yeah, they gave her a launch, and they and in this race, they wanted her, and they said that she didn't take their endorsement, and that was largely because Andrew Cuomo didn't want her, something she denies but is believed to be true. Cuomo backed Tish James. Cuomo was hoping that she would help him in terms of being an African-American from New York City, a woman. And so he wanted her on the ticket. Originally, he considered her for lieutenant governor, but Kathy Hochul wouldn't give up the line to run for Congress. So they backed her. And all of a sudden, overnight, she became the establishment candidate tied to Cuomo. And really, we're going to see if that was a fatal decision on her part politically, because if she loses, a big reason for that is because she hitched herself to the governor's star.
And she spent some time having to disentangle herself from that.
Yeah, she had to sit there and say, I can be independent, nobody controls me. But then others would say, but, you know, he not only supported you and backed you, but he held a fundraiser for you. You got money from a lot of the same people who give to him. So it was something that really became an issue. I don't know if she really foresaw that. And the fact that she snubbed the Working Families Party by saying, you know, not really going for their line, I think that hurt her in the views of a lot of people. And there were people, including two city councilmen in New York City, who endorsed her and then switched to Zephyr Teachout, the Fordham law prof, who's one of the other candidates for attorney general in
who,
the primary.
As we should say, even though you work for the Daily News, and they endorsed Zephyr Teachout for attorney general, as did that other minor newspaper, the New York Times.
Yeah, for a while there, it looked like Teachout still had the momentum that everyone thought Tish James would have. At the debates, the other three candidates, including James, Sean Patrick Maloney, the Hudson Valley congressman, and Lucia Eve, who used to work for Hillary Clinton and Governor Cuomo, they all ganged up on Zephyr Teachout. And if you needed any kind of sign that they felt that she had the momentum, that was it in those two debates. Look, she's very popular, Zephyr Teachout is, among the progressives, and we are going to have to see what the turnout is and whether those young, charged up, anti-Trump progressives that we keep hearing about who are going to show up for the first time at the polls, whether that actually happens and whether they go for her.
So here's a fairly obvious question, but I'm going to ask it anyway. Andrew Cuomo is spending all his time attacking Trump. That's a question.
Yes. Democrats don't like Trump. New York is heavily Democrat. Andrew Cuomo attacks Donald Trump, which he didn't always do. Don't forget, when Trump first took over, Cuomo initially said it may be a benefit having a New Yorker in the White House. And then even when he criticized Trump's policies, he never mentioned it by name. But once it became clear that he was enemy number one in New York among progressive Democrats who make up a good part of the Democratic primary, the governor has been the number one guy out there just ripping on Trump on everything. He has focused most of his speeches on that and really ignored Cynthia Nixon, which is what, you know, it's a Rose Garden strategy. You would expect him to do that as long as you don't flub other things like, oh, I don't know, at the last minute, have the state party send out a mailer that rips your opponent, your Democratic opponent, for being silent on anti-Semitism.
Maybe you could talk about that a bit.
Yeah, there was really a 1-2 hit on the governor. He was cruising in. The Siena poll says he's up 40 points over Nixon. But over the weekend, this past weekend, he got really hammered on two things. One was the opening of the Tappan Zee Bridge. He held this big ceremony saying it's going to open tomorrow. This was last week. And then they couldn't open it because there was a safety concern. And a lot of people felt that he was pushing it along so it can get done and he can announce it before the primary. So that was bad enough. He was hit on that. But then over the weekend, it came out that the state party sent out a mailer to about 11,000 people in the Orthodox and Hasidic Jewish community, really hitting Cynthia Nixon on Jewish issues, including saying she supports the BDS movement, which is the boycott of Israel. She also, it said, has been silent on anti-Semitism. And, you know, people hit back hard, including many Democrats on the record. First of all, Cynthia Nixon has two children that she's raising as Jewish. Cynthia Nixon herself isn't Jewish, but her two kids go to synagogue.
Is her partner Jewish?
Her partner is not, but the person who she had the kids was with was.
I see.
And so Cynthia Nixon, after that mailer came out, you saw people, including her rabbi down in New York City and her rabbi's wife, who is Randy Weingarten, who is a famous and powerful teacher union leader. They put out on Facebook a statement together jointly saying that this is a smear tactic and we haven't endorsed in the campaign, but this is wrong. She is not anti-Semitic. And this issue has not gone away. And it's as we tape this, it's Wednesday. It's not going away today. And it's likely going to go right into the primary day.
So the question is, Ken Lovett, I'm Jewish. I resented this very much. Personally, I did. But on the other hand, he didn't care. The campaign didn't care about me. They cared about a solid block of Orthodox Jewish people who tend to vote as a block.
And that's what it seemingly was aimed at. And the governor said, oh, I didn't know about it. And I told the state party, which he controls, by the way, and few people believe that either he or those close to him is in a circle, didn't know about this. And matter of fact, the New York Post reported on Wednesday that before this mailer came out, the Cuomo campaign was pitching a story about Nixon's record on Jewish issues. So it kind of ties in. But Cuomo has said, that's not the case. I didn't know about this mailer. I don't like the wording. It's not what we're about.
I didn't know about the mailer. I didn't know my best friend was a corrupt crook, and it's been very painful to me. I didn't know about anything. Hey, if you're the governor, you're supposed to be directing everybody who's around you, aren't you?
Well, Nixon has said, Cynthia Nixon during the campaign and during the debate said, well, it's one of two things. He either didn't know and then he was incompetent, or he did know and he was corrupt. Which one is it, is what she said. And that's a good line, and it's a legitimate question.
Okay, just for the hell of it, which one was true?
Oh, I have no way of knowing. But I do know that Andrew Cuomo is someone who has a reputation of being hands-on, who has his hands in everything, that the fact that he didn't know about the mailer was surprising to a lot of people. The fact that he would say that may not have been surprising, but if that's the case, people were shocked to hear that.
I am interested in Gillibrand. That's a fascinating issue. Every time there is a list among the pundits in this country of who could be a presidential candidate, almost every time Gillibrand is one of them, which is fascinating because, you know, the old saying is you don't want to get anywhere between Chuck Schumer and a microphone. And you sure don't want to get anywhere between, if you're a New York politician, Andrew Cuomo and the presidency. And yet there is no notice about him among the pundits being a top candidate for president. What's that all about?
No, his name has been mentioned, but it's certainly not at the top tier like Gillibrand's has been. Look, Cuomo, the left of the party, which really decides a lot of these primaries and caucuses, They're very wary of him, to say the least. Some downright hate him.
But he's 40 points ahead in the poll.
He is 40 points ahead, and we will see what happens on Thursday. But certainly he's popular. You know, it's funny. He's kind of the opposite of what Gillibrand is. I would say Cuomo is more popular in a lot of ways in New York than he is outside New York, whereas Gillibrand is more popular outside New York and probably better known than she is even in New York.
So, Ken, sooner or later, if he wins by a lot, mm-hmm. there are those of us who really think he'll be running for president, something that was denied to his father. I happen to be one of those people. You may not be, but I do. I think he wants to be president.
I think he would like to be president. I don't know if he sees a path to be president right now. And, you know, he said during the debate, which didn't surprise me, he says, you know, I'm going to serve a full term, a full third term, which would rule out running for president.
Unless
God strikes me dead. But, you know, New York politicians can always change their mind. And if he does really? See a path, say the progressives really take a beating in this year's elections, the midterm elections, not just in New York, but elsewhere, then maybe they're looking for more of a moderate and he sees a path. And then all of a sudden his argument becomes, I think I can do more to help New York by taking on Trump and winning than, you know, staying in New York and leading the opposition. So he certainly has enough wiggle room, and New Yorkers aren't going to hold it against him. New York, yeah. like their politicians, big and with national aspirations. Look, Hillary Clinton, everyone knew she was running for president, and yet she said she wouldn't really answer that question. But everyone knew it was, and no one held it against her. They reelected her as a senator.
Yeah, exactly right. Let's go to the Independent Democratic Conference. Now, that's an interesting group. Everybody out there who listens to this program will remember that these are the guys who have sided with the Republicans, kept them in the majority. Some people think with the implicit or at least benign support of the governor. But sooner or later, it was bound to happen that people were saying, hey, what are these Democrats helping these Republicans stay in power for? And Andrew, facing his reelection, calls them in the room and says, cut it out, boys. Get back in the Democratic Party. And they make the head guy, Jeff Klein, the number two in the old line, the regular Democrats in the state Senate. So then what?
Well, you know, they thought that would solve the problem. If you were them, there was a lot of pressure on the what was known as the IDC, the breakaway Democrats. There's a lot of pressure on the governor to fix it. And even though the governor for years said, I have no role in this, he certainly, when it came to his own primary, got that done very quickly. He got them to rejoin the Democratic Conference and brokered that deal.
He did what he always could have done. He called them in the room and said, get back where you belong.
But the thinking at the time was that would be the end of it, and that everyone would be unified moving forward, except people have memories. And a lot of people on the left of the Democratic Party really can't stand these breakaway Dems. And so now each of them, all eight of them, have primary challenges on Thursday.
Is it thought that any of the primary opponents can actually win?
Yeah, there's a couple of races. Certainly. I mean, I think Jose Peralta's in Queens is in a tough race. I think Tony Avella in Queens may be in a tough race. Jesse Hamilton in Brooklyn, Marisol Alcantara in Manhattan. And even though I think he's going to win, but it wouldn't shock me if he doesn't, the old leader of the IDC, Jeff Klein, could be in a really tight race. The others, I think, are safe. But, you know, you never know in this environment. But you could see them lose 2, 3, 4 people, which, you know, out of 8 is quite a bit.
You bet. Let's go back to the AG race. I'm fascinated by this character, Sean Patrick Maloney, who is leading in some of the polls and who's very close to, you know, the top of that pile. In any case, he's from Rockland County. He's a white Democrat. He is, of course, gay, which he talks about a lot. And New Yorkers seem to like him. Can you sort of parse that?
Well, you know, he worked for the Clinton administration. He worked for the Spitzer administration. He spent a lot of money on ads when everyone else wasn't up. So New Yorkers, well, they like him. They like his ads, certainly. I've known people who saw him and really thought they were quite good. So I think he got his name out there in a race that is a low-profile race. And so I think that has helped build his profile. Some Democrats, and we'll see how many, are really upset with him because he's also still running for Congress, his congressional seat. And, you know, some thought it was illegal. His argument is, and it hasn't been challenged.
If I win the primary.
His argument is New York law does not allow you to have the nomination for two offices at one time. He says, I don't have the AG nomination right now, so if I win that primary on Thursday, I will decline the congressional nomination. But why that angers a lot of Democrats, forgetting that you have three women vying to be the first statewide elected attorney general, female elected attorney general. We have one now, but she wasn't elected. But on the other hand, you also have the fight to take back the House. And Maloney's district is a swing district. And a lot of Democrats feel that if he's not the candidate, then they could lose that seat. And now they feel that even if he is the candidate, if he loses the AG primary, that people, you know, the Republicans are just going to use the argument this was his consolation prize, that he didn't want it, and you want someone who's going to represent you who wants to be in Washington and take on these issues. So Democrats, a lot of them anyway, are not too happy with him.
Well, that's right. But it is fascinating to me to think about one potential hypothetical situation. The Democrats failed to take the House by one vote, and that could be the vote.
And that could be the vote. It's absolutely. I think that is going to be something that we're going to watch on Thursday, and it's going to be something we watch moving forward if Maloney is the candidate for attorney general.
Let's talk about Congress a little bit more. We have Faso in the 19th Congressional District versus Delgado. Then we have another race, Tenney versus Brindisi. And then up in the North Country, Stefanik versus Cobb. Let's take them one at a time. Faso versus Delgado.
It is an ugly race. Faso's people have brought up Delgado used to be a rapper. He's a Rhodes Scholar, too, but he used to be a rapper. And he
Harvard, right?
At Harvard, I believe, yep. Yeah. And he used some street terms and other language in his music that has become an issue in this race. Delgado supporters have said it's a racist attack, and we'll see how that plays upstate. Right now, I think, you know, Faso is well known in the district.
He's ahead.
He's ahead. He's been an assemblyman. He's been a congressman now for one term.
So. And he's a great talker.
And I think, you know, it'll be tough to unseat him, but it's certainly a seat that can be won. And again, if the Democrats come out in droves in November because of, you know, an anti-Trump fervor, then I think that would help Delgado.
Now, you know, this radio station always likes to put on debates. We told the candidates, you know, we'd like to have you. And the Green Party candidate insisted that he be included in this. The other people who wanted to put on this debate said, no, no third parties. And Faso, indicating, I think, that their polling tells him he's going to win or that he's ahead, said nothing doing. The third party candidate has to be there. Of course, that diffuses things.
Mm-hmm.
So let's just talk for a second about third parties. How important are they in New York?
They can be spoilers. Look, you know, when we're looking at the governor's race, I would say the only way the Republican, Mark Molinaro, has a real chance is if Cynthia Nixon loses the primary to Cuomo, she stays on the Working Families Party line. Then all of a sudden you have Nixon, you have the Green Party candidate, Howie Hawkins, and then you have an independent bid by former Syracuse Mayor Stephanie Miner. They could all draw votes away from the governor. If they draw votes away, then all of a sudden the Republican doesn't need 50%. They need 45, 44, somewhere in that range. Now, and that's their only hope. And you would see that in Congress, too. A Faso can certainly be helped if a Green Party candidate was different and drew votes away from Delgado, because they're certainly not going to draw votes away from Faso.
From the Republican. I want to talk to you a little bit more, if we can. So we got to keep this short. Tenney versus Brindisi. Up there in the Utica area, that's a possibility that could go Democratic, right?
Absolutely. That's also a district Republicans fear they could lose. Brindisi's a veteran assemblyman. Tenney was an assemblywoman until she won 2 years ago for her seat. But it's a district that certainly could go Brindisi's way.
And in North Country, we have Stefanik versus Cobb. Stefanik, still a fairly young congresswoman from the area, is thought to be unbeatable. Is she?
I think that's going to be a tougher one. And again, you know, a lot's going to be on turnout and whether Democrats really come out in droves. But I think she's definitely the favorite at this point.
Yeah. Okay, now let's talk about the lieutenant governor's race. That's fascinating. You know, somewhat stupidly in New York, if a person runs for governor, they usually bring the lieutenant governor with them. It's assumed that they have chosen their running mate, but not in New York.
No, it's weird because how it works is in the primary, there would be a lieutenant governor primary. They run on their own separately, and the governor runs on his own separately in the primary.
But in the
but
general
then whoever
election,
wins, yeah. they run as a ticket. So the last time we saw something like this was Mario Cuomo back in 82. He wanted Carl McCall, and then there was a guy, Al Del Bello, out of Westchester County, who primaried McCall and won. Cuomo was forced to run with Del Bello.
Cuomo
they won.
Wins.
Cuomo, Mario Cuomo ignored Del Bello for 2 years to the point where Del Bello got so bored he resigned and left because it just wasn't a role. And so now, flash ahead, and Andrew Cuomo is running, and his lieutenant governor, Kathy Hochul, is running against city councilman Jumaane Williams. Williams is known in New York City. You know, she's leading in the polls, but it was thought that he could have a shot at this. And if that were the case, he would not only would he have to run with Cuomo, but Cuomo... We were talking about third parties a second ago. Cuomo would have to dump Hochul from the Women's Equality Party. He'd have to dump her from the Independence Party. Because if she ran with him on those two lines and Williams was his guy on the Democratic line, those other votes wouldn't count toward his total.
That's unbelievable.
Because you have to be have the same ticket. So,
have you talked to any of the mavens, the legislators who write these laws to see if they have any regrets about having laws like this?
No, I mean, everyone at the time it happens says yes, and then nothing happens. We saw that when David Patterson picked Richard Ravitch as his lieutenant governor, and that never happened. So people said, well, maybe we should put in law how, you know, what happens if a governor resigns and a lieutenant governor goes up. Nothing happened then, and nothing will happen now. But Williams sees the role differently, which could really be interesting if he won, because he sees the role not as a partner with the governor, but as an activist. And he says, I would credit the governor, whoever it is, when they're doing something I believe in, but I would speak out and oppose them when they don't. And can you imagine Andrew Cuomo having, you know, Al Del Bello may have been bored, but he didn't go out there swinging at Mario Cuomo. Can you imagine Andrew Cuomo if Jumaane Williams won and then started ripping him on issues like education funding?
And of course, Jumaane Williams is his worst nightmare. He is, of course, of color. And Andrew Cuomo is very concerned about that constituency. And he's often painted, whether it's true or not, as an angry man, Jumaane Williams. And Cuomo has got to be sweating that one.
Although Cuomo's also painted as an angry man.
I would say so.
But no, Jumaane Williams would come out and will speak out. And I don't think we've seen that. He sees it as an activist role, as he says, not a glorified ribbon cutter or a well-paid ribbon cutter.
And, or a guy who goes to funerals.
And Kathy Hochul says her job is to be a partner with the governor and speak out when you disagree within the administration, not publicly, kind of like a vice president. You don't usually see vice presidents going out on their own contradicting the president. People have said, though, you know, Hochul was asked, well, when have you ever disagreed with something with the governor that you told him and fought for, and she couldn't come up with an answer?
She didn't say that that's private?
Yeah.
Well, I've met Hochul, and she's a nice lady. There is no question about it, and she's very bright. So there's really a distinction in the way this is going.
Yeah, and Hochul is. She's hardworking. I've been here now 24 years. I've not seen as hardworking lieutenant governor. She goes all over the state, and, you know, it's going to be an interesting race. I think it's going to be very interesting because when you would think that the Democratic Party right now would be uniting to fight on Trump and to go after Trump, the subtext of these elections isn't just Trump, but it is this intra-party squabble where basically for every race of consequence, you have an incumbent establishment candidate who's being challenged by an insurgent progressive Democrat. So I think we're going to see where the party is overall after Thursday.
Yeah, I have a question for you, but you have to put the question mark on it yourself. We live in interesting times.
We do live in interesting times. And, you know, things you don't see coming, whether it's a mailer attacking someone on their Jewish views or, you know, bridges or, you know, whatever happens. All the stuff going on in Washington and the impact it's having on New York and other states. I think it is interesting times. Sometimes it's dizzying. Sometimes it's harrowing. But it's certainly interesting.
Dick Nixon in Watergate, he didn't have to do that. He was going to win. Andrew Cuomo didn't have to have his people sending out accusations that Cynthia Nixon was anti-Semitic.
There's certainly that argument, but, you know, Cuomo is full charge ahead, and what it's done, too, is it managed to highlight. I did a column on all the errors, the unforced errors he's done throughout the campaign, and others have brought up the fact that this goes back to when his father was governor and he played some dirty tricks with Ed Koch. And so, you know, it's kind of resurrected a theme that he did not want resurrected in the last few days. And it's dominated the coverage of the last few days of the primary race against Nixon. Whether that's enough to help her, I doubt it. But we'll see. You know, stranger things have happened. It's been a weird year all over the country.
Can love it. We thank you so much. It's always wonderful to have you with us. You're better at this than anybody I know, and we thank you so much for being here.
Thank you. Be well.
The Capital Connection is distributed with the cooperation of the public radio stations of New York State. David Gustina is the producer of The Capital Connection, a production of WAMC Northeast Public Radio in Albany. Support for The Capital Connection comes from New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.